Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Indie Business Radio for September 10th, 2007. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. As a mom, you know, I bend over backward to teach my kids good manners. And I want them to say please, I want them to say thank you, I want them to address adults using respectful terms, etc. And now and then, I catch myself forgetting to say those things when I ask them to do something around the house, like go clean up your room. I forget to ask nicely. But forgetting your manners around the house is one thing. Flubbing them up in public is quite another, especially if you have a business where your customers choose to do business with you in part because of how you treat them. We're going to be talking about that today with Sean Gilliland, owner of Administrative Support Associates in Washington, D.C., and author of Success with Etiquette and other books designed to help people put good manners to work in their business lives. Today, Sean's going to share how manners, etiquette, and attitude can make or break your business. Welcome to Indie Business Radio, Sean.
Thank you, Donna Maria. It's a pleasure and delight to be with you today.
Well, I'm certainly excited to have you, and I will be on my P's and Q's with my manners this afternoon.
Okay.
Sean, tell us a little bit about how you made the transition from traditional work to having your own business.
Wow, well, that started in 2001. I started my career on Capitol Hill working for a U.S. Senator, and my last position was legislative assistant speechwriter, but I said, you know, there has to be a better way for me to do what I want to do, to really carve a path for myself and figure that out. So I decided to resign and work on that transition in terms of entrepreneurship.
Uh-huh.
And what I did, I started temping to maintain my savings and figure out what I wanted to do and develop my business plan. And I had an idea about a kiosk, which would sell old school, what I call old school candy.
Uh-huh.
That I grew up on, Lemon Heads, Chico Sticks. And then when I did the research and the finances, I said, oh, I can't afford this. It's too much capital. But doing my temporary service work, I found out every place I went, I never disclosed my background, and they would say, wow, you're no ordinary temp. Your professionalism, your work ethic, your punctuality, how
uh-huh.
to answer the phone. And I didn't understand it because I'm thinking, how are you supposed to answer the phone? And they're like, trust me, the quality of temporaries we receive, it's, you know, we feel like we have no choice. And I said, uh-huh. even amongst all of the staffing agencies, and they were like, it's about quantity, not quality.
Mm-hmm.
And a warm body is better than nobody.
Right, right. And, well, most businesses feel that way when they're in a crunch on a Monday morning.
Right, and then personnel was saying, HR directors were telling me, but it's really costly because we have to take our 80,000 person to train this person over and over again, and it's inefficient.
And you took your natural gift for communicating with people in respectful ways and turned it into a business.
Yes, and what I discovered at that moment, I said, there's a niche here, and what I discovered where I said, my niche would be providing high-level executive assistance for private equity investment firms.
Uh-huh.
Because I had knowledge of the private equity industry.
Right.
And the need, and I recognized their quality of personnel, and that was my, that became my business plan. So I started providing staffing solutions for private equity investment firms.
Uh-huh.
High-level executive assistance. So what that meant was I had to recruit, interview and hire candidates and employees for my clients and for my company to work with me. So, during the course of from 2001 up until 2005, 2004, interviewing, after years of interviewing job candidates and observing employees who like good manners and business etiquette skills, I couldn't believe it. I said, you know, I have to do something about this. This is ridiculous. People showing up late for an interview, dressed inappropriately.
Right, right.
Inappropriate language, attitude, just negative attitude, telling me what they will and will not do on a job. I had money on the table. They're telling, can you call me back? I'm like, what? I can't believe my observations. I said, you know what? This is really impacting people's professional success in the workplace and personal. And when I look at small business owners, the same, because they think, well, that's not important. It's not a tangible item, so we'll do by what we have. And no, it makes a difference.
So you decided to do something about it and make a living at the same time.
And make a living at the same time. And that's when I created the Success with Etiquette training program.
And was that in, that was in 2005?
That was in 2005.
So, Sean, what exactly is etiquette? I mean, we've all heard of mismanners and things of that nature, and of course we are all raised to say please and thank you, but why doesn't it end there? What exactly is etiquette?
Well, etiquette is, it extends beyond table manners, and it's very simple. It's making people feel comfortable, value, and appreciate it. Demonstrating good manners. And when you're dealing with customers, you demonstrate, you smile, you make customers feel appreciated and valued, and you treat customers with respect, empathy, and efficiency. So that saying thank you and showing humility, treating others the way you want to be treated.
Now, can you make people feel comfortable, valued, and appreciated without really knowing much about etiquette?
Absolutely, you can. Just, I tell people all the time, you know what you can do? Smile.
Smile.
Smile. That's universal. And we're a global society. It's universal. If you just smile, that makes you more approachable.
So in business, if you smile and you're more approachable, is that something that you suggest to your business clients translates into dollars?
Absolutely. And what's more important is your tone of voice, your nonverbal communication. And that's what a smile is. Nonverbal communication, and then your tone of voice when you answer the phone. That's a big impact on profits for a business.
You know, it's funny that you say that. A couple things. I remember doing a trade show once, and on Sunday, after 3 days at the trade show, of course, I wanted to have people come up to my booth, but I was so exhausted. And when they did, of course, I put on my smile, but I remember that my eyes felt dead. And I'm wondering people can see that, can't they?
Yes, they can see that and they feel it. And you're saying your body language, your posture, your gestures,
yeah,
that speaks to a person. That's conveying a message without words. And that is the nuances of your behavior that impacts a person's perception of you, that forms a person's perception of you.
And I have a, tell me what you think of this. I have a business person. Every now and then I give her a call. And whenever she answers the phone, Sean, I can tell that she's smiling.
Yes. It translates into a warm welcome, enthusiasm. It's in your voice. It's in your posture. And I can hear that you're excited. And I'm happy to do business with you. And I do a demonstration in my training sessions.
Uh-huh.
I tell everyone, close your eyes. You know, give me your biggest slouch. Close your eyes and say, go answer in your phone greeting, your business greeting. And they'll say, good morning. May I help you? Now, what does that translate to you?
This sounds like a fast food restaurant.
As opposed to when you sit up straight,
right,
you prepare your voice, good morning. This is Sean Gilliland. May I help you? You can hear me. They weren't smiling, and that translates into your tone of voice.
Right.
And that makes the difference in terms of dealing with customers.
It can change their attitude too, can it?
Absolutely. And as I tell everyone, Donna Maria, what is important is that every business, regardless of your industry, product, service, or size, treat every customer as if it's your only customer.
Uh-huh.
And they are the most important customer, creating great experiences one customer at a time, because customers are your major determining factor in the growth of your business.
Right, right, that's right. And so how does this translate into online etiquette, Sean? I mean, obviously, when you're in front of a person, you get to display your smile, you get to use the right terminology, and they can see your face. What about businesses that are mainly online? What are some tips that you can offer for people that deal with email all the time?
Oh, email. That's a great business tool in terms of efficiency, but it can be abused. People are really informal with emails.
Right, so give me an example of what you mean by abuse versus just, you know, informality.
Well, abuse could be in terms of whether you're sending information without a person's permission.
Uh-huh.
So you're sending reply to all.
Okay.
You know, in your email, then there's confidential information or it's proprietary information that the other person, if you haven't received their permission, it's not appropriate to send to others.
Right, right.
So I really advise people to be very obtain permission before forwarding messages, even forwarding messages that someone else sends you. And businesses now, big businesses are frightened in terms of their corporate image, their proprietary information that's shared with the world. So they have strict policies. And so that's one way to respect a person and not abuse email.
Well, tell me, Sean, what you think of the use of autoresponders by business owners.
Autoresponders, and it depends on what you're using it for, if you're just saying thank you, but...
Let's talk about some do's and some don'ts. I know, let me give you an example. I got, I work with someone, I hired her as a consultant, and every time I email her, I get an auto response back that explains to me her policy of only checking email once a day, and that's why I may not hear back from her for, you know, 24 or 48 hours. And it clogs up my email box.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, you know, but on the other hand, I am a client. She's sending the same autoresponder to everyone. I mean, what can you offer some tips for people about using autoresponders or not? When is it appropriate? Because if I email her three times in a week, then I get three valueless emails back from her every week.
Right. And so, again, you're not feeling valued and appreciated.
Yeah, I'm
more attentive.
I'm lumped into a category, or just a lump of people. I get the same message that the spammers do, I guess.
Exactly, and what the client needs to recognize is the person as your customer. Again, it's about finding ways to keep them happy, and knowing that, well, I'll have to have a certain email address for auto response in this, or for my clients, I have to really reply. You know, I have to. What? Create a system which allows me, I just have to check my system, and that's part of the owner in terms of delegating or responding to emails themselves to say, in particular, if it's not an order that you send to everyone, we have to make it specific. I have to address and respond within 24 hours to our client's email.
Because, again, split
the emails up, divide it. And if you have to delegate someone to contact you and tell you that the client will contact you with tomorrow by this time, then that's appropriate. That's what you should do. But it's that personal attention that you need to know that someone is there to address your issue. Again, that's the efficiency and treating customers with respect. And that's what I call customer service etiquette, which is the rule that guide the interaction between an organization and its customers.
Right.
And so, again, here's where you can lose people, because at a certain level of business, we expect you to know. And so, say if you don't tell her, or you're not the only one. If you feel like that, there are other customers. So how many customers, this is just one she knows about, how many other customers is she losing?
Maybe feeling that way. Your book, Success with Etiquette, Sean, says that if you exude confidence and competency, that you're moving yourself in a good direction towards, you know, displaying some etiquette. If you don't know all the proper rules and regulations about how to introduce people and what order people should be introduced and things of that nature, can you make up for it just by exuding that kind of confidence and competency in what you're doing?
Yes, you can. And it's okay to make a mistake. You just keep going. And people are appreciative. But when you lose it, it happened to me years ago again. And I'm familiar with protocol and etiquette and introductions, but I was at a client site and we were waiting on a guest to arrive. And I At that moment, the guest arrived, and the VIP, the company's chairman, was there, and I had to make the introduction. I don't know what happened, and I'm a pretty confident person and competent, and I have no idea what I blanked. And I couldn't how do you make a proper introduction? They're both VIPs. Who do I introduce first, the man, the woman? And so what happens is I made an introduction, and I just kept it together. But I know what happens is people can look at your reaction, your nonverbal communication, your posture changes, your tone of voice, your facial expression, and say, and they can tell something's wrong. So, and it's okay. You just keep going.
And in your book, Sean, you offer some really simple, almost common sense things, but still things that we don't always do. For example, your book recommends using a person's name repeatedly when in conversation and end a sentence by saying their name.
Right. That's so you can remember their name. And people love for you to show that you care, that you have a genuine interest in what they're saying, and that you know that you're taking time to get to know them on a human level. So if you have a hard time remembering names, and when you interject a person's name, that lets them know that you're listening, that you're aware, and that you're really in tune to what they are saying and that you care about them. So it's really good to repeat it. Some people say, well, I'm not good with names. Well, that's why you should repeat their name as they say their name.
Right.
Good morning, Donna Maria. Oh, it's nice to meet you, Donna Maria. And then throughout the conversation, you may interject their name again. And when you leave, Donna Maria, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day.
Well, and it does make a difference. I remember the first time I noticed someone was doing that to me in a professional situation. She made it a point, it seemed like, every three or four sentences to end the question that she was asking me with my name. And I remember at the end of sentences like that, I would stop for a minute and look her in the eye because she said my name.
Right, and it keeps you attentive.
I was like, wait a minute, I have to remember what she asked me, just not how fabulous my name sounds. At the end of the sentence.
And it's always, the saying is, be interested, not interesting.
Right.
Listen.
Right. Well, so, you know, etiquette, I mean, do we have to be concerned about any differences between the way we treat men and women in the etiquette world when it comes to business?
No. Actually, well, there's what we call gender-neutral etiquette, and that means everyone is equal in business.
Okay, so we don't have to worry about any kind of differences.
No differences. People open the door for people. So if the woman arrives at the door first, she can open the door for a man.
Uh-huh.
If you're in a business meeting, the man does not have to stand when the woman enters or every time she leaves or, you know, enters a room. Because, again, it's not, you want to make everyone equal. We're all equals here, and that's what etiquette is. And that's why there's a proper way when you introduce yourself. You never use an honorific. So I would never say, I'm Miss Gilliland.
Right.
How does that sound? I'm Miss Gilliland.
A kindergarten teacher.
Right. Your industry teachers, that's different.
Right.
But in a business setting, you would not use that honorific. And in introductions, you introduce people based on rank, not gender or age.
So let's say you're at a business conference and you're talking with a friend of yours and she's the president of another company and a couple of other people come over and they're presidents of companies. I mean, is there a specific way that is proper etiquette to introduce them to each other?
Well, you would, if they're coming over to you, you would introduce, they're considered the guest.
Okay.
So you always introduce the client or the guest first.
And so give me an example of how to do that.
So, for example, the client or the guest, would be, you're standing with the president. We'll say you're standing with Mr. Boss, the president of the company, and your client and or the guest comes over, and you would introduce Mr. Client. May I introduce Mr. Boss, the president of the company?
Okay.
So you say their name. You say the most important person, the VIP's name first.
Okay.
Always say their name first. And may I introduce, may I present.
Uh-huh. And the guest is the most important person.
Yes, always. The guest or the client, it's always. Again, remember, what is etiquette?
Uh-huh.
It's making people feel comfortable, valued, and appreciated.
Right.
And extending, and that's showing respect.
Right.
That we're happy to have your business.
Right.
We're happy.
Okay. Now, how about your dress, Sean? Most of my listeners have, you know, we have small businesses, me included. We work from home a lot of the time. Perhaps you even work from home.
Right.
What are some of the, you know, obviously inside your home office, I'm not talking about that, but, you know, when you do go out to have a meeting with your banker, or if you're going to be sitting down with someone in a group setting and you're going to be handing out your business card, what are some things that we should remember about our dress?
You always dress in a professional, conservative business manner. And if you're unsure of the policy or the people that you're meeting with, call ahead and ask, is there a dress policy? Is there a dress code? So that you know ahead of time. But it's always better to be overdressed than underdressed. And so that means men wear ties. You can always take your tie off if you need
right.
to. Women... Right. We have to be more conscious of our hemlines, of our blouses,
uh-huh.
to ensure that it's properly secured
uh-huh.
and not exposing too much,
right.
and it's fitted properly. And so we have to dress professionally and stay well-groomed. Our nails, our jewelry has to be subtle, as well as our perfume and our cologne, and men's cologne.
Yeah, you can really turn some people off with too much scent, can't you?
You can, and now we're in a different arena where piercings, tattoos are popular, but it's inappropriate in a business setting, event, so you must conceal your tattoos and one earring. Men, no earrings.
Right.
And once you learn the culture of a company or you feel comfortable with a person, then you can really be more flexible in your attire.
Uh-huh.
And if you have doubts or questions, call ahead, because, again, it's embarrassing if you go to an event and everyone's dressed up and you're casual, even in khakis, even though you have business casual. But if everyone has on a suit, professional attire, it does make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, and your book points out is the significant percentage of hiring managers who say that they hire people based in part on what they're wearing at the interview.
Yes.
By the same token, if you're a small business owner, is it the same sort of analysis that happens when you're trying to get new business or sell a product?
Absolutely. First impressions. 5 seconds to make a first impression. It takes a person 5 seconds to form an impression of you based on your appearance. And so 55% of first impressions are based on visual. So that's your smile, your direct eye contact, your body language. So people are looking at the way you're dressed, and people judge a book by its cover. So just because you're a small business owner, it does not immune you from dressing appropriately or properly or presenting a professional image, because, again, you're selling a product and you want
uh-huh.
people to buy from you. So if, and this truly, this happened, and we commented, how are you, this person was selling cakes.
Okay.
But they had the cake wrapped up in tin foil. It wasn't presentable or anything anyone would want to eat. It was smashed together, but
right.
you sell cakes. Well, it's your overall presentation. Who would
right.
want to eat that cake that you're
right, even if it tastes good.
Right, even if it tastes good, it looks bad.
Mm.
And so
looks are everything, aren't they, when you're trying to sell something?
Absolutely.
It makes such a big difference. And that's, you know, that's one of the things that's such a challenge for small business owners, is that we can have a quality product.
Mm-hmm.
And we may be able to barely afford to make that product quality. And then we have to spend so much money, it seems like, to wrap it up and make it look good.
Right, and it doesn't... But again, that presentation, and then even in your appearance, whether it was the product, but it was also their appearance. They were
right.
not, they were unkempt. So why, food, why would I eat something from you? It's not what I would want to eat in terms of the quality. And I'm looking
right.
at you, and you're cooking my food. No, people are very particular, and that affects the senses. And purchasing is emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, let's talk a little bit about that. If purchasing is emotional, then is it all the more important to kind of be on top of some of this stuff and know some of the quote-unquote rules about, you know, expressing yourself in ways that could be defined as proper etiquette?
Absolutely. People want you to listen actively, to be responsive, and to empathize. So you have to listen actively to address their needs and be attentive so that you can really articulate and convey the value of your service or product and how it will solve their problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be in tune. And some people, you have to know their personalities, and some things are unwritten. And again, that's where body language, posture, the nonverbal communication becomes very important because, for example, if you're talking with someone, I was talking with someone, and I think I said, oh, I saw your wedding pictures, and they were great. And she smiled and said, thank you. But from that I gained, she doesn't want to discuss her personal life. And that's okay because we had a great relationship thereafter.
You mean because she didn't say more than just thank you?
Right. It was the way. Again, you have to be attuned to a person's tone of voice, their eyes, and maintaining that direct eye contact is always demonstrates trust and acceptance of people. And so looking at her body language, and I'm in tune to body language, nonverbal communication, I could tell that's just not an area until you really get to know her that you want to even go into if at all at that point.
Right.
But I was able to read that, and everything went well. And we built a great relationship, but some people are not comfortable in sharing certain information. And so you just have to recognize the nuances of their behavior so that you can make them feel comfortable and not offend anyone.
Let's talk about dining, Sean. How many of us haven't been in a situation where we're seated at a wedding reception or some kind of formal or semi-formal dinner event, and do you see people looking around the table to see who picks up which fork first?
Oh, absolutely. And dining gets people into a lot of trouble.
I remember, I don't know if this is necessarily etiquette, but I certainly remember my first professional job, the bosses took us, all the employees, us low-level people, out to dinner at a fancy, fancy restaurant. And I ordered the sweetbreads because I thought it sounded really good. I did not know that they were for, I know everyone listening probably knows what they are, but just in case someone doesn't, they are pig's brain. And I did not know that. And I wasn't the only person I'm concerned because no one warned me about that. But anyway, I don't know if that's necessarily etiquette, but it certainly demonstrated a lack of experience.
Right. And how did you respond to that
area? So what is the proper etiquette when you sit down and you're at the conference table, and, you know, having dinner at the conference or in a formal setting? I mean, let's set it to rest here. What is the appropriate way to start eating your food?
The appropriate way is usually if you have a host, the host would guide you. So if you're just at a table and everyone's eating, and again, if the host leads, and if you do not have a host, then you can look around, but you start from with your silverware, you start from the outside in.
Okay.
And so you place your napkin in your lap, and this is an issue, the napkin.
Okay.
No one knows what to do with the napkin.
Okay.
So you take the napkin, place it under on your lap under the table, and you unfold it in a half.
Uh-huh.
So the crease is towards your waist. And when you leave the table, never place the napkin. If you're coming back, never place the napkin on the table. Because remember, the tablecloth, that's sanitary. It's clean. It has to always remain clean. So you place it in your chair. And if you're in upscale dining, they will fold it for you. So don't act surprised if you come back and your napkin's folded or they place the napkin on you. And when you leave, so you never blow your nose, you wipe your face, or blot. And your water, here's a simple way to remember your place settings. And we use BMW. Your bread plate is to the left. The M is middle for your main entree, which is in the middle.
Uh-huh.
And your water is always to the right of you.
Well, that's easy to remember.
Right, BMW. So you have a BMW.
I remember the first time I had someone come up and put my napkin in my lap.
Yes.
That never happened to me before, and I no one ever told me that it would happen.
Right.
And so I was like, what is he doing?
Right. And if it happened, see, that's, you shouldn't respond that way.
No, I didn't say that. Of course I didn't say
but your
that.
Your facial expression, probably.
Where I was, it just had never happened to me before. I kind of went, ooh.
Right. And I get that all the time when people are saying, I didn't expect it. And I said, again, that's when you remain your poise.
Right.
You know, to dine like a diplomat. And keep your, even if it's a dish that you do not like, for example, if you're in someone's home and they serve, it's always appropriate because they've prepared this meal for you as a to show you their appreciation for you.
Uh-huh.
So you taste it, you know, and you have to taste it unless it violates your goes against your dietary or health restrictions.
Right, right.
But it's appropriate to always taste the dish and show them that you appreciate their hospitality and generosity.
Uh-huh.
So you want to always taste it.
So, Sean, it sounds like all these things really combine, you know, in their individuality to create sort of an image of you as a business owner.
Absolutely, because, again, 85% of your why people buy from you or hire you or you attain a job is based on your people skills. 15% is technical because obviously you have the skills,
right?
Or you wouldn't be here,
right?
So you have to do more than that, and particularly for small businesses, people, you have to provide high quality products and services, since many cannot compete on prices against larger competitors, and that's customer service.
That's
and
true.
Whenever a customer feels misled, mistreated, or ignored,
uh-huh.
That's considered bad profits because
right.
The maxim is was every unhappy customer would tell 10 friends.
Right.
Now, an unhappy customer can tell over the net thousands, over 10,000 people all over the world about their bad experience. And that's your reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your brand. And
right.
So what message are you sending? And that's why all the components, your overall presentation skills, must be polished and professional, and you have to be prepared.
And you also recommend, Sean, that people eliminate certain words from their language, from their conversation, just completely eliminate them. What words are they?
Huh? That's one word.
Okay.
Yeah. What? Who is this?
Okay.
And baby, you people, in terms of in terms of endearment, and you and people mean well,
uh-huh.
But I'm not your baby,
right.
Or even words such as okie dokie.
Uh huh.
This is business, and so you always want to maintain a professional image and respect for someone. And you, again, your goal is not to offend.
Right.
I always want to show how much I appreciate your business, and that just, I want to demonstrate good manners in every way. So I always have to use appropriate language. Cannot tell jokes, whether it may offend someone, whether it's racial, sexist, whatever, refrain,
mm-hmm.
derogatory.
Mm-hmm.
Just because someone's not there doesn't mean you will not offend the person or the
right.
other person. So be mindful in your discussion. And again, pay attention to what people are saying non-verbally.
Right.
Because that's how people sell. So if you're talking with someone who's really what I call a touchy-feely person,
uh-huh.
and they enjoy talking about their family and enjoy talking about just day-to-day, then you have to go with that flow and help them understand that I understand you, and I understand your desires and your needs. And you may have someone who's very analytical, so they're not operating the same way as the touchy-feely type of person.
Uh-huh.
So analytical, I just need the information.
Right, right.
And once I have the information, we can move forward. And so you have to adjust.
Right.
But at the same time, you have to make that person know how to make that person feel comfortable as well, but in a different way.
One of the points you make, too, is about really how business is all about building relationships.
That's what it's about.
And how once you establish that relationship, it's hard to establish it any other way than how it's first been established.
Exactly, and they will not leave you. If someone feels, and I learned that when I started temping, when people would say, well, you're just one of us, you fit. That means I made them feel comfortable. I don't know, as the ladies say, I don't know, but you fit.
Right.
So I fit into their culture. I made them feel comfortable. But if you make people feel comfortable, then they will support you. And they and when competitors call, they say, well, thank you. We're very happy with the temporary agency we use at this time with our vendor.
Right. Right.
And so that's what you want. And they'll tell you, and they'll be truthful with you.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can improve on your business and products and services. So that is key in making people feel comfortable. May I share a story with you?
Please do.
A success story in etiquette. I was at a dinner, a small business awards dinner, and the gentleman sitting next to me, I was at a table, and the gentleman sitting next to me had partners in his company's name. And I said, oh, is that private equity? And he said, well, we're an investment company. And that was the extent of the conversation. But we had, and I asked him, I said, well, what are you, how about your family? What do you do for fun? He said, well, come to find out, his wife is from St. Louis. I'm from St. Louis.
Okay.
Then he says, well, he had two kids. He said, well, we shoot. Oh, my goodness, I shoot. I love to ski shoot. And you wouldn't know that unless you you know me or talk to me. He said, really? Oh, he tells me about the type of gun I need. He invited me to shoot with his family and a 10- and 12-year-old children, invited me to shoot, come to the family outing, shoot with them, and then he had to leave early.
Uh-huh.
And the lady next to us, she got into the conversation, too. So here you have people relating on a human level, not business. He leaves. He said, I have to leave early, but give me a call. I like to do business with you.
And it had nothing to do with your business.
Nothing to do with my business. It was relating to one another, a common point of interest, making him feel comfortable, and we had something in common. We both, and he signed me up. He told me, he said, I am going to sign you up for NRA membership. I said, great. And he did. So now I'm an NRA member, gun toting.
Okay, well, that's a whole nother conversation.
I know, right?
Got all of the email lights and phone lights to start blinking here.
Okay.
But, Sean, you know, what? Another thing that's so fascinating, I mean, you're sharing such great information, and what I hear is so interesting to me is that you didn't really start off your entrepreneurial journey thinking that this is what you would be doing.
I have no idea. No idea. And I said, when I worked on Capitol Hill, and it's so interesting, and I handled labor, education, appropriations, children, and family issues, and we look at it today, and I said, if I had told you, basically, I would start my business and teach people how to act appropriately, no one would believe me. They would have thought I was crazy. But it really impacts companies' bottom line and their image, their corporate image, and they recognize that now.
Well, and Sean, it's fascinating to me that you have a talent for this. That's obvious. It's not something that you necessarily went to school for. I mean, you obviously have lived your life for a while, so you've picked some of it up. But you have a talent for this. You have a gift for it. You convey it in such remarkable terms. And what tips can you offer for any of the listeners out there who may have a talent or a gift and want to turn it into a business like you've done? I mean, like you just said, this is not something you didn't write, like, a business plan
right.
about doing this. You know, I know you know people like this all the time. They're
right.
good at something. They have a knack for something. What do they do?
Well,
I mean, you quit your job, and then you moved into one thing, and you sort of transitioned into this, and I know everyone's story is different, but
right.
what are some of the things that you learned along the way that you would suggest people do and then maybe not do?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I've learned that you have to be patient. And you will not always have the answers. And some things are not to be figured out. But you have to explore. And really, if there is a passion, it may turn it. Keep an open mind. Keep an open mind. Because I didn't know that this is what I would be doing. And when it happened, the opportunity, I just, the light came on. But that was after I stopped stressing over, okay, what do I do now?
Yeah, and you had already left your paying job.
Right, right. And I was confident in terms of, I will be okay because that's the least I can do. As a writer, speechwriter, I can always go back. That's the least I can do. What's the most I can do? And it really took me a while because I came from a structured environment. This is what you do. You wake up. Here's, you know, you're at the office. You have a bill to, you know, policy to develop. It was really structured. But in the world of entrepreneur, I don't know what's going to happen. And I was able to really start to think on my feet instantly because you don't have time.
What you just said was that doing what you were trained to do was the least that you could do.
Yes.
That's a fascinating statement.
Yes, and I said, what's the most I can do? And
wow.
So as the years, you know, progressed, I still was trying to find my passion.
Right.
I knew, I said, well, staffing, something within me said, it's not it, but that's okay. When you, someone told me, if you don't know what to do, just don't do anything right at all.
Uh-huh.
And that moment will come to you.
Uh-huh.
And when I just sat back and kind of say, okay, we'll see what happens. Let me just do what I have to do and still kind of have byproducts here and there and test those. And then it just, when I developed, I saw the need in terms of etiquette and teaching people to help them understand the impact of their behavior. I said, wow, this is important. This is what I'm passionate about. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I know that for a fact now, and I just developed that. And you will have challenges and obstacles in terms of whether it be finances, whether it be support, but you build a network in terms of your advisors, in terms of the people you mentors and you have in your corner, and you use your resources. I use every business resource that's available, and it's a process, and understand it's a process, and it does not happen overnight.
That's a very inspirational. I'm so glad that we talked a little bit about that because there are so many people who know they're good at something and they're just not sure what to do, and your advice to kind of just sit and wait and do what you're doing
right. Until
the opportunity opens up.
Right, and it was a light bulb. I'm like, and even with in terms of my book, I had said years ago, I would like a product. Oh, what kind? And I'm stressing over trying to find a product. And then, as I developed Success with Etiquette, the modules and the training program, I already have it. It's
here. And then
here.
It expanded into other books, right? Because
yes.
You have, like, Success for Men.
Yes, Manners for Men.
Right.
Delightful Dining Etiquette and Exquisite Etiquette for Women.
So you just basically took what you knew and put it on paper, and then you had your product.
Yes, and I had my product. And then as a writer, I write various articles, and so they're syndicated. So it's just taking all that. That's what, and using it now. And I said, I won't be a writer. I won't do, you know, I'm worn out. But I enjoy it because I love what I'm writing about now. And it's natural. It's my experiences.
Well, I'd love to have an opportunity to come and hear you speak or deliver a speech or something on etiquette. Where can we find out more about you, Shawn?
Oh, sure. The website, www.successwithetiquette.com.
Okay. So your books are available there, and your speaking and all those kinds of things are available there for us to go look at?
Yes.
Okay, great. Great. Now, I have to ask you this. Do you ever find yourself seated at the dinner table or at a meeting with someone who's clearly intimidated by all your great editing?
Everybody now, when I'm at dinner with friends, they're, am I doing this? I'm like, look, I just want to enjoy my meal.
Let your etiquette guard down when you're in a setting with your girlfriend, right?
Exactly. And they're asking me, did I do this properly? How do I place it? Is this correct? And I'm like, leave me alone, please, so I can eat.
That's right. Not at work. I'm not at the office. I'm
right.
I'm here.
Exactly. And Donna Maria, it's so funny. I was teaching young men in terms of their 20s, and they were entering the workplace, and I had eight young men and young gentlemen. And we had a dining etiquette class, and there's a proper way to eat soup. You know, spoon it away, like the ship's sailing away from you, so you spoon it away from you. And so the one gentleman was on his last drop, and all I could hear as I was talking to someone was clink, 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 clink. And I turned around. He said, I'm so sorry, but it's so good.
It's so good.
I said, just tilt it. I said, at this point, you need to order another.
I thought you were going to say that he was slurping.
Oh, no. It was worse with the clinking. Clink, clink. And it's so funny. So I got on my soup, and I said, you know, you were right. You know, I'm about to clink, 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 too. It was so delicious.
It is. Oh, goodness. On that note, Sean, I have to say we are out of time. Thanks for joining us today on Indie Business Radio. Sean Gilliland, author of Success with Etiquette. You can visit her website and get some etiquette tips, purchase her books, and get some information on where you can go to meet her in person and hear some of her great etiquette tips to help you keep those bad manners from killing your business. Indie Business Radio is a production of Indie Business Media. Join the conversation at indiebusinessblog.com and download podcasts or enjoy streaming audio of all of my radio shows at indiebusinessradio.com. I'll be back next week, September 17th, with Lorraine Morris Cole and Pamela McBride, authors of How Women of Color Achieve Professional Success. And then on September 24th, I will welcome the Indie Beauty Network's own Dawn Fitch, of Puka Pure and Simple, straight from her appearance on the Today Show. She's also authored a book, and she's going to share tips from that book on how to succeed in business and in life. I can't wait for that one. We've got some other great interviews coming out throughout the fall. I hope to see you there at all of them. In the meantime, this is Donna Maria signing off. Enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.